Y'all, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It's like on Christmas night, you get visited by Santa Claus, right? And he's bringing you all these gifts. And all you want to talk about are the flying reindeer.
I connected with Mark Turner on Blue Sky. I wanted to get into this because I also discovered that there's a wonderful interview on Tubi with Mark. And Mark is a consciousness explorer, remote viewer, experiencer. He's had a lifetime of interesting and unusual events, encounters, experiences, and somehow this all came to a head in 2014. At least that's my understanding of it. Mark, I'm glad you're talking about it because so many of the things that you mentioned in the interview that I saw, they tick all the boxes. Do me a favor, a brief introduction, and thank you.
Yes, I have, I just consider myself to be just an ordinary guy. I work in the software industry. I've always been interested in science and space and had a curiosity about UFOs and things like that. But as you said, it wasn't until one night, March 2014, when I saw one, saw an alien face to face that it really just brought things home for me. And that's when I started talking about a lot of the stuff that's been going on because it is something that I feel compelled to do. I like to be honest about things and try to tell the truth about things. And I'm the kind of person who is always going to call something out when I see it, you know, whether or not it makes other people comfortable. You know, I'm the one who's going to mention the elephant in the room. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. The question I have, though, is when you have some kind of a transformative event, something that changes you like that. Sometimes it takes a while to be able to actually talk about it. And I like the way when you're saying, well, I told my wife and my kids the day that it happened, and they're all like, yeah, right. Okay, fine, Dad. Bye. So, yeah, that's how it goes. Okay. So how has it changed you and your ability, you know, to just be totally upfront and out there with what you've experienced?
Well, you know what's really funny, Wendy, is it has actually evolved since that time. You know, there have been other encounters I've had, but just even thinking back to the one of March 2014, when I mentioned that at the breakfast table, I think I was kind of still not really believing it myself at that point. You know, it was something that was just so incredible that I felt like I needed to say something in case it was a dream or something, and you know, and I was just imagining it all. I just wanted somebody else to have a witness. It's funny, you know, once I reached that point, the way I look at it over time, you know, having had over 10 years, 11 years to really just absorb all this, is that I've noticed that there's been particular, gates that I've had to go through, bridges to cross before I would, be able to accept something new as being real. Right. So, previous to that face-to-face encounter, you know, I was believing that other people saw aliens. I could take their word for it, but it really didn't sink into the level of, oh yeah, there's absolutely no doubt about that. So it even took a while for me after that night, you know, several weeks to a month or something before I realized, you know, hey, this is not only real, but there are other people out there that are having this very same encounter, and I've got a lot to learn. And it is a rabbit hole that I've not found the bottom two yet. You know,
yeah.
The more I learn, the more I realize I don't know. And that's why it's important for people like me to talk about it, because we all have a piece of this puzzle and I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what the heck's going on, just like everybody else.
In my own experience, that same kind of thing of having the ability to have somebody, a co-experiencer there who mm-hmm. helps corroborate your story is huge. And that first moment when you were trying to wake your wife up, hoping that she would wake up, and there was no response. That's not unusual.
Right. And the main thing was just having a witness there, you know, somebody who could prove that I'm not dreaming this. And as I was pondering on that later, it's a very lonely feeling when there's nobody there to rescue you, you know, and you are face to face with something you don't expect, especially considering that there was a dog, you know, in the next room, the doors were locked, the alarm was set. My spouse is right next to me. There's nothing I can do. I was not, feeling very safe at that point. You know, I was scared.
Okay.
I'll be honest.
So let's if you would, you know, reframe it for me. So what happened? What do you remember?
Well, it was a, fairly warm night, I guess, for March. It was misty, rainy. I think there was a lot of fog or something outside. Wife and I went to bed as normal. Somehow I wake up. I assume, I don't honestly know, remember what time it was. I think it was after 1 a.m. That seems to stick in my mind. But I'm lying in bed and wide awake all of a sudden. I realize there's a presence in the room. I'm paralyzed. I cannot move anything but my eyes. And in the dark, over to my left, about 6 feet away from my bed, near the foot of my bed, is some sort of being that's standing next to my closed bedroom door. And I can make out a light bulb shaped head, big dark eyes, and it's about 3.5 feet tall. But I know, I can tell, it knows everything I'm thinking, and there's no place to hide. That's how I was feeling. So I'm in bed. I know I'm awake, and I know my wife is right next to me, and I can hear her breathing, so I'm trying my hardest to wake her up, and I attempt to just yell or shout or call her name or do something. I was trying to nudge her, of course, but I couldn't move. The only thing I could manage was this really pathetic whimper coming out of my throat. Couldn't open my mouth or anything, but I heard the whimper. It did nothing to wake her up. She just kept sleeping. It was like a very deep sleep that is highly unusual for her. She doesn't really sleep all that deeply. But I heard that echo, that sound, that whimper, echo through my room. And that convinced me that I was wide awake and this wasn't a dream, because it sounded exactly like I did make that noise in this room, and I heard it bounce off the walls like it should have. So at some point, I think it approached me, and I started to say, I don't want to see this. I don't want to see this. And I don't remember much of what happened right after that moment, but at some point at night, they took me someplace. I never saw a spaceship. I never saw a UFO. They took me someplace. They were doing procedures on me, what I would call medical procedures. And I remember lying on a table or like a dentist chair and seeing faces above me. They were doing something to my lower spine while I'm lying there. And my mindset has changed a bit at this point, where it's like when you go to the dentist and you trust these people to do what they're supposed to do, and you just kind of zone out a little bit. Mm-hmm. I was kind of letting them do what they needed to do, sort of in sort of a sing-song kind of mood, I guess, where, you know, almost like you get laughing gas at the dentist, right? You're really not feeling any pain. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, I did feel pain. They were doing something to my lower spine that sent searing pain through my body. And whatever they had done, that pain just snapped me out of whatever anesthesia or hypnosis or trance or whatever that I was in. And suddenly I'm wide awake and I'm staring at them. And telepathically, I tell them, you're hurting me. Please stop. It was a demand, right?
Yeah.
And I thought that. And as soon as I said that in my mind, they stopped whatever it was they were doing and just looked at me. And then I went off on them. I started to yell at them. I said, yeah. You're supposed to be like these masters of the universe. How could you not know that that hurt? You know, my dog has more empathy than you. I was mad. And so I went off. And like I said, to their credit, they stopped hurting me at that point. So there were other scenes where they had, you know, various tools and stuff they'd used on me. I don't really know what the order of that was. It was all kind of a jumbled set of images, but at some point they brought me back to my bedroom, and I remember this being backing up through the wall in front of me as it went. So it was staring at me as it walked through the wall behind me or right in front of me. And then for some crazy reason, I went back to sleep and slept mm-hmm. soundly until the morning. And when I woke up, that was one of the most odd things about my whole experience, is that I must have either had this crazy, scary nightmare, or I got abducted by aliens. But either way, why wasn't I like wide awake with all the lights on in the house and, you know, a pot of coffee brewing. You know, it was a very strange reaction to something that was that intense. So I had lots of questions about that afterwards. And how did I know to speak with them telepathically? Why did that just come out naturally? It was almost like that's not the first time I'd done it.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what I like about it, because the fact that you automatically intuited that telepathy was the way to connect and they stopped when they looked at you, there was an understanding and they responded. That to me was a direct response, a direct consciousness ability that not everybody has done with these guys.
Mm-hmm.
At least from what, you know, the experiencers I've studied, my own experience, having been in this situation and not seeing anybody, but seeing something that we might consider an orb, a drone inside the bedroom, the dog let me know it was there. The dog kind of growled a little bit and I'm thinking that he's growling at the cat. When I open my eyes just a little bit, because I don't want to put them off and I'm spying on them in my own way, then I see there's a glowing inside the window of my bedroom, about a foot inside and a foot down lower than the ceiling. There's this round disc of some kind, and I'm saying disc now, it's like a dinner plate size thing with about 13 or 14 lights, and I called it the Christmas tree, because they're light bulbs that are clear, like you would see in about the 2.5-inch round light bulbs, and most of them are red, and then it also has some green ones. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what is this? And I'm thinking, I need to remember this, because I will forget it if I don't start counting the bulbs. As I focus, the intensity of my focus, that thing picked up on it and immediately went through the window, and I can see the lights through the mini blinds. Oh, you're still there. There's no way I can take a picture. Fine. I went back to sleep, because that was it. It was like, okay, I know you're there. I can't do anything about it. You don't want your picture taken. Gotcha. See ya. Night. That's one of the experiences. But that's the thing of, you know, you're halfway asleep awake when you realize something's happening. Thank goodness the dog let me know. My husband slept through it. You know, there was nothing. And I didn't feel threatened. I was just so, the word would be gobsmacked. Wow, what is this? It's in the room. And the fact that it was red and green, I think, made me feel okay, because that was a familiar, like I say, Christmas tree, so I didn't feel threatened. Mm-hmm. The deal is trying to reconcile that with, okay, that isn't ours. It went directly through the window with no noise, no sound, and it didn't have a sound the entire time. There was no smell, no sound. I didn't feel a shift in the atmosphere. It was what the only thing that got my attention was the dog growling. So that when you are describing certain things about that, the state when you are, you feel like you've had Novocaine, you've had that little shot to make you kind of disoriented. Mm-hmm. That's a classic sense that people who've had these encounters have of you. They kind of hypnotize you and make you feel a bit off, but you're still aware of what's happening in most cases. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
When your wife,
yeah, I believe that.
Well, I was going to say, when your wife didn't respond, and you said you felt alone, how did you deal with that?
Like I said, it was scary. The next morning I wrote everything down as best I could remember it, made a little sketch of what I'd seen in the bedroom. But I tell everybody I was much braver the morning when I was actually writing all that down than I was at the moment. And I've heard people like Whitley Strieber talk about how there just seems to be some sort of primal human reaction that you have to the looks of these other beings. And in my case, I think it was what they call a small gray, that there's some kind of visceral reaction that humans have to meeting one of these beings. He would say that he's been visited several times and it doesn't ever get easy for him. I kind of understand what he's talking about. It is something that it can be, well, first off, it can be shocking finding anybody, you know, in your house, much less someone from another world, allegedly. So there was a lot going on, you know, and fortunately, that's not always been the case where I've been surprised by them showing up. They've actually been fairly good since then in letting me know that they're around or they're going to come visit.
Okay, what are the cues? What do you get?
Well, often I will see a light in the sky, which is clearly not an airplane, and it won't be threatening or anything. It'll just be there. Like often in a particular spot where I'm bound to look, where I can't miss it. There's also sometimes like a feel that presence again. You know, having seen orbs around a lot, I think some of them might actually be these alien beings who are just on the edge of our reality. Yeah. I think they have a way of shifting their reality bubble, I guess, just slightly off the frequency that we're at. And so they can sort of hang around generally without being seen, but they can definitely be felt, like the way your dog discovered and showed you. And mm-hmm. you know, certain people who are intuitive like me can sort of feel that energy around. Last time when they visited me in September 2021, they actually knocked on the bedroom wall above my head before they showed up.
Yeah.
There was actually a physical knock. Uh-huh. So they're learning, you know. I mean, they haven't figured out that, you know, they should actually use the door instead of coming through the wall. But, you know, they're learning a little bit about the etiquette of just popping in unannounced, you know, and that helps, you know. Once they sort of play more by our rules, then it makes it a little bit easier for us to not freak out so much, you know.
Well, I've had that experience where they said, I said, can I see you? No, we don't want to frighten you. And so I said, well, I'm not afraid. I've had my life threatened before. And so I've survived and I'm okay. And I think I've dealt with that. And they're like, okay, fine. Mm-hmm. 3 a.m. in the morning, I hear this voice in the corner of the room. And at that time, when I was being told that, there was somebody standing in front of me. And it was directly in front of me. And so there was someone there. But 3 o'clock a.m., in the morning, I hear this voice, and it says my name. It's kind of a mechanical voice. It doesn't say my name correctly. It says Winnie. And that is when the moment I felt the flight or fright, that immediate right. adrenaline of, holy cow, you know. And then I knew exactly what they're talking about. It was that freeze moment of I'm being threatened, and I felt my whole body, and I thought, I knew the minute I did that, it had blocked the transmission. I wouldn't be mm-hmm. able to connect because my body did that thing. And then I heard right. the laugh. I heard the chuckles of, we told you. And that's what they're saying. We have to recalibrate our fear response, because that's, right now, that's the barrier. We automatically think, I'm going to die.
Exactly. That is the message that I've been getting from them, is that we need to work through our fear, and yeah. the fear is what causes problems. And if we can get beyond that threshold, then things can really get fascinating, interesting, and in fact, beautiful. So I've actually had face-to-face conscious interaction. Well, maybe not interaction, but I've seen one out in public, broad daylight around other people. And I think this came about through my making the same request that you did, that I would like to see you in person. Mm-hmm. And this was something they actually granted for me.
I think they work us up to that. And I think mine wasn't a never. It was a until, you know, you need to be prepared. And mm-hmm. this is your period of evolution. Where we, and mm-hmm. they told me, we have to become telepathic. That's the next phase. And that's what we need to work on, because it not only helps us with them, but other entities in our space. And my experience, what the word they keep saying is transdimensional. So I know transdimensional. The popular word is interdimensional. And they say, no, we're right beside you. We're right beside you. And so that's mm-hmm. a huge difference in the way that the terminology kind of describes this interaction, this engagement. And what I liked about your story was that you've connected a lot of dots. And the thing is, you've had time to do that and time to make comparisons. And I think that's a lot of what this is about. We have to acclimate to the fact, for one thing, that it's real.
You know, since I've been speaking out and, you know, you mentioned the documentary I was in, people have come up to me and they'll say, you know, there was a time that happened to me a couple of years ago where, you know, I was paralyzed and there was this being there and I didn't know who to talk to or anything. These stories start coming out of the woodwork once somebody is brave enough to start talking about them. And the fact that I've done that has helped out several people I know who've reached out to me saying, you know, this is, you've kind of help solve this mystery for me. And then I learned something from them about, you know, an aspect of their experience that sort of tends to make sense of something that happened to me. So I'm finding that this is probably a lot more widespread than a lot of people realize. And for several years, you know, I mean, I was face to face March 2014. But then afterwards, when I looked back on certain events in my life that I just kind of wrote off as my imagination or a dream, then I started to think, well, that probably actually was another alien encounter for me that I had just sort of blown off. So I started connecting a lot of dots and things that happened in my past. And I think that a lot of people will eventually get to that point where they have to come to terms with it. And it will just start to make sense to them. They'll get this eureka moment that they'll say, you know what? That wasn't a dream last night. I've got, you know, a mark on my body or something that I didn't have before. There's something going on. So I honestly have just really benefited from talking with other people about the things that happened to me and then getting feedback from them. So if you talk about me coming to all these great conclusions, it's because I've been working together with so many other people just like me to try to puzzle all of this together and figure out what's going on. We got to start talking about this.
And that's why I connected with you. When you said, hey, anybody who wants to talk, just connect. And that the difference is I'm aware of people and of these events happening since the late 80s. One of the people that I've interviewed multiple times and still am in contact with, there's a documentary in the works. I don't know how quickly that'll come out, but his name's John Foster. He's 87. And he tried to go public after he had his memories all start in a download flooding back of a program that he was involved with other experiencers. He was also able to identify the other experiencers. But the response to him at that point, a lot of it was extreme fear. And he had a lot of negative pushback. He also discovered other experiencers. But the response in his social circle and in society at large, I mean, you're talking, this is around the time John Mack was doing his research and the Ariel phenomenon, that encounter in Zimbabwe hadn't happened yet. That was 94. So all this stuff then that was coming forward from experiencers trying to say, this is happening. We're part of this. Something's going on. And people were saying, go away, be quiet. We don't want to hear from you. And so now having so many people come forward and feeling needing to come forward is a huge change. And I think it's for the best.
Yes, I'm fortunate to know some of those people who early on started talking about things from the 80s and later. The public wasn't ready to accept that, and they took a huge beating for the things they were saying, just telling the truth. So I have a lot of sympathy for your friend who went through that kind of craziness, and he probably doubted his sanity there for a while. If the whole world tells you that you're making something up, it's really hard to ignore that. So I stand on the shoulders of giants, really, in that regard, and have just the utmost respect for the people who came before me and were willing to talk, because that made it easier for me to come forward. And I'm sure that there'll be others who look at me the same way as they come to their own realization someday that this has gone on for them. So.
Well, and the other thing about this, with people doing documentaries and short interviews in video form, it's spreading to a larger audience and a wider circle. And I think that also gives it more validation, more credibility, especially when you're looking at something, then you can review it and listen to it over and over again, where sometimes you just go to, back in the day, you went to a meeting and maybe if you were able to tape record it, that was it, but it was gone. There was no social media, so there was no way of really going out and experiencing with other people who might have the same story, some kind of community. That's also helpful. My other question for you, though, is when you're talking about these experiences continuing and the interaction that you have, are they still doing, you still have a health appointment with them?
I don't really know what kind of cadence they're keeping now. The last visit I can vouch for, I think, was December 2021. That's when I had the face-to-face meeting. But every couple of years or so, I would expect something to happen. So they're still around. I think they have taken an interest in me. And, you know, if they were going to visit, I would anticipate now that I would be able to see those signs. Like I mentioned before, I would get the feeling. So, and it's I don't really see it as being a terrifying sort of event anymore. because I think they have my best interest at heart. When they were doing that thing to me and causing me pain, they stopped immediately after I complained. I think that there's some kind of project that I'm involved with that I might not understand on my particular level, but I consider them to be helpful for me. Like, for instance, they have been teaching me various things in what I used to call a series of alien dreams, where they were showing me how to do things with my mind, psychic stuff. And I'm not the first experiencer I've talked to who has gone through the same thing, almost like it's called almost like an alien school or something, where you go someplace in your dream and you're in a classroom and these beings are there testing you to see how you do on various things. So they've taken an interest, especially in me developing my psychic ability.
This is the way I know when something is important, and when they kind of break the barrier of, okay, here, you know, get up to speed. This morning, 4 a.m., I felt a knock, mm-hmm. a knock on my head. All right, the back of my head, and this is a headboard. There's a wall. There's nothing behind the bed. It's not open. Hmm. I felt the knock on my head. I immediately have a reflex response and jerk awake, like, oh, and I'm like, okay, fine, thanks. But that's because this connection with you is important. The things that are happening right now are important. So I get some of these little heads up encounters, which I also journal, I document. I've been writing since I had a big shift in 1997, which involves other paranormal stuff. So they have a way of dealing with each person on the level that they are either proficient or needing to improve, in my experience. And mine have been a little bit more, it depends on what's going on, overt or clandestine, depending on what's happening in my life. But right now, we're going through a huge shift. And there are things that are changing that we have no control over, but we are part of, and we're supposed to be wide awake. And these kinds of experiences that you're sharing give, I think, other experiencers a validation that they're not crazy, because that is the very first thing you say. I have to be crazy. This can't be happening. Nothing has prepared us for these kinds of encounters. And Whitley Strieber, when I got his book, when it first came out, I'm like, I need to get rid of this book, because the image on the cover, I really don't want that around me. And at the same time, I was having experiences that I wrote off as dreams. And yet it was preparation. It was preparation. But I did get rid of the book. I'm thinking, gosh, I should have hung on to it. It was the first edition. you know, but that's the stuff. And when we're looking for ways to corroborate our stories, some of the clues, and that's why I said, how do you know when they're around? Well, sometimes they're a barometric shift. When they were in my house, it was like you're at the top of a mountain where the elevation is crisp and clear and clean. It's higher elevation. And then I knew, oh my gosh, there's a whole bunch of them, because just one doesn't do that. But when there's a bunch and then they shift your reality, when you experience, have encounters in a different dimension, and in you're living that and knowing this is not my reality, but what the heck, here I am, I'll go with it. And being told not to telegraph so other people wouldn't, in that reality, wouldn't see you as different. You could just experience it and return. And then how well you pay attention to their instructions, that's important too. If you follow the rules, fine. If you don't, fine. They take notes and they know how to approach you. Do you have that sense?
As I said, I strongly suspect I've been having this stuff throughout my life. And I would imagine that the earlier experiences I had in the 70s and the 80s and even to some extent the 90s were, that was a time where they would prefer that I sort of kept things quiet. So I do agree with you that something has changed. And I think they were really anxious to see how I might integrate this within my life. Whether I would. I think it was my choice to speak about it or not, but I think that they are very pleased that I've chosen to accept this and talk about it. I think that's something that they are hoping that more people start to talk about. I think it's time that those secrets that they had are no longer held. Now, some people talk about aliens and how, you know, they have these, what they call masks, memories and everything, screen memories, yes. You know, where they, instead of seeing a small gray, they wake up and think they were looking at an owl, for instance. Some people think that is the aliens being deceptive. Hmm. I have a different point of view, and I think that they probably do that for our benefit.
Yeah.
Because our psyches can't really handle the fact that we were taken out of our bedroom, you know, by these alien beings. So they look for something that will comfort us. And since they've got access to our mind, if we start looking at an alien and saying, oh, that's got to be an owl, I think they will subtly encourage that, you know, telepathically. Yeah. Yes, yes, it's an owl. Just calm down. I'm an owl. You can think of me as an owl.
I know I had a screen memory. I know exactly what mine was. Mm-hmm. Do you remember yours? Do you remember? Do you have one in mind? I can give you an example.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
It's funny because my point of view now has changed, and looking back on some of those instances where I thought I went on late night field trips, I can totally picture now the aliens that were there, and I don't really need the screen memories anymore, I guess.
Yeah.
And the fact that I was granted a face-to-face viewing, broad daylight in public around people, seems to me show me that I've sort of graduated, I guess, in my relationship with them. I think there's a lot more trust between me and them. So I don't recall. The only thing I can say about screen memories is maybe there was one instance in December 2021 where I woke up the next morning knowing that overnight I'd seen a bunch of kids trying to come into the cabin where I was staying. And I knew, of course, in the morning light that those weren't actually kids. But is that a screen memory that they planted, or is it just my dreamy head, you know, trying to make sense of something that I was presented with? So can't really blame that on anybody but me and my imagination at the time, you know what I mean?
Well, and so I think some of it is like we're used to seeing at that when they're 3.5 feet tall. We would see them as children and automatically assume. And so then you don't need a screen memory. Your mind's already filed it in category children. Okay. Without looking at it, it just put it away because it didn't do the math. For me, I was walking from one room to another and I looked in the living room and saw my cat, who would have been seated on the top of a chair looking at me. And she had a collar on that was, I thought, such a great pose. I wanted to get my camera to go take a picture of her. The collar was a pink collar with a little green, or my green collar with a little pink heart. And it was just, she was so photogenic. She was a calico cat. And so I was walking and thinking, I'll get my camera. And I remember at that moment and turn on a dime to go back to the room. She's not where I thought I saw her. She's in the chair facing the other direction. The thing that turned it and let me know I wasn't supposed to see it, or I might have had a different response if I saw it, was that she never wore a collar, ever. She got out. She was a Houdini. Out of every collar I tried to strap on her, it would I'd find it.
Like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, by the water heater somewhere. I'm like, oh. So that was it, though, if that collar hadn't been present. So my thing later was, so was I supposed to know the collar was there? And then I went back and tried to remember, what was I really looking at? It would have been a being about 3.5 feet tall, and those eyes would have been about right where that top of the chair was. There's no way she could have been on the 3-inch rounded curve of this wicker chair. That was impossible. Mm-hmm. But I knew, that's what a screen memory is. Brilliant. Brilliant. And that, to me, that was just a way of saying non-interference, a presence who's there and not at that moment wanting to make contact, just kind of keeping an eye on me. And since I looked and it wasn't prepared for that, I automatically got this wonderful picture that I couldn't take with my camera, but a memory. And that, so I thought that's, you know, that Because there are other images like that, but I thought, well, here's a way of giving somebody a description of what might be a screen memory, and how you can tell the difference would be something that was out of place, that didn't make sense, and your mind has to be pretty quick on that. But the collar didn't belong, and that was how I could identify it. That's why I asked, what do you remember if you got that image? I agree with you. My thing is that this isn't deception. It's a matter of our own personal awareness, our own ability. How are we put together? Are we afraid of everything? And is that an automatic fear response, or are we curious? I think if you're curious, you've got a better chance with this.
Well, one of my fun hobbies, sort of related to esoteric stuff, is lucid dreaming. I've done this at least since the mid-90s, if you're not familiar with lucid dreaming, that's where you bring your waking consciousness into your dream, and you realize that you're dreaming, and then you can control your dream, and it becomes a giant playground. Basically, it's one of the top things I've ever learned how to do. Part of learning how to lucid dream is getting into the habit of realizing when you're dreaming. And one way you can do that is get in the habit of looking at your watch, for instance. And if you look at your watch and then you look away and you look back again, if the numbers have changed all of a sudden, that might be a clue that you're dreaming, because often in a dream, numbers don't tend to be stable and they might jump around. So you can learn to look for little dream signs like that. And if you do that during the day, that habit will carry over into your dreams. So why is this important, talking about aliens? Let's say you get presented with a screen memory. You're out being taken somewhere and there's an alien there with you. If you get into the habit of questioning what you're looking at, why am I standing in front of this owl? Wait a second, that's not an owl. You can break through whatever screen memories you have, break through that whatever hypnosis they put you under, and you can see things as they are. So that, I think, is a great skill. And there's one instance, I don't think I even talked about this in the other show I've done, but I remember clearly there was one dream about 2006, 2007, where I was in the dream. I was in the hotel room, I think, and I was talking to these two bald men standing in front of me. And I look at them and something seems a little funny about their eyes. And that ability that I had to look for clues that the reality wasn't as it was made me jump up and suddenly I became lucid in the dream. And I pointed at them and I said, ha, you guys don't exist. This is a dream. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is, I remember the two beings looking at each other like they were kind of dejected, like they didn't expect me to realize that. And instead of what would normally happen in a lucid dream where I could take control, I think they were actually aliens. And I had just suddenly broken out of whatever, dream state I'd been in and realized I was actually face to face with aliens. So they didn't disappear like I thought it would in a normal dream. They just looked at each other and sighing to each other, oh, this guy figured it out. Yeah. It was really, really kind of funny, but it turns out I don't think I was dreaming there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. What I remember about having the contact and having the presences in my house was, and this was because there were several things that happened. I was being taught mm-hmm. certain things, and it was on a mostly conscious level. I did not see them, but I heard them, and my pets also heard them. So there were things happening, and what I knew was that the barometric pressure shift, that was unusual. Mm-hmm. And there were sounds that normally wouldn't, a helicopter sound, which what the mm-hmm. heck, above the house. And the voices, the feeling of being watched is also part of mm-hmm. that too. You have somebody who's there and you feel like you've got somebody like an overseer or a personal, I don't know, somebody who won't go away. And mm-hmm. there's that sense. And fortunately, my husband also was experiencing these things. So I had a corroborator, all right? And mm-hmm. When my reality shifted, then I had somebody else who could corroborate it. And there's mm-hmm. there's a lot to be said for taking notes and journaling, because sometimes you'll remember things later that you didn't write down. All of a sudden it'll pop back in. Oh yeah, that happened. Or symbols that stand out that you didn't really have any connection to before. And then later on these symbols will appear, and then it's like a trigger memory. So these things mm-hmm. I've seen, they're like little plants of ways that you can remember, recall, become more conscious in the middle of these experiences. Your own memories, I think, as you said, you know, you've reframed some of this, having had time to look back and compare and have other people share their stories. I think they're huge, because when I shared this with John, the fog and the shift in reality, those fog things are important. Because to me, that's when it thickens. And I don't know if you call it the veil, but the frequency somehow shifts for us to be able to have these encounters. And fog is a huge clue. Fog or mist, or I think it also has, the weather is also a factor. And I think the guy that you had the Tubi interview with, he was trying to say, when did you have it? What was going on? So he could compare notes with what else might have been happening in that same area. That's brilliant.
Yeah, it was, I think that they are around, like I said, just slightly outside of our reality, and you can learn to feel that. It's almost like a static electricity feeling, and I've done that in places that are haunted, too, where there's an unseen presence. You can kind of feel that.
Yeah.
The other clue for me is electricity, like lights and things will just not work the way you expect them to, and it's completely unexplainable from a like an electrical point of view. So that's happened several times. And when I see that type of activity happen during the day, I will know that they're around. And that's kind of when I expect that I'll get a visit later that night.
Does it affect your electronics, like the computers?
Well, you know, I work in the software industry as my career, and I'm well versed on all the things that can make a computer break. So you've got to really go off the deep end if you're going to impress me by having a computer malfunction, right? Early in my career, I worked as an IT manager, and there was one particular person in the office who could break computers in a way that I could not explain. So I don't doubt. Yeah. And so there might've been something going on with him. Yeah. But, but when the lights don't act the way they should, and they're shorting out for no apparent reason, coming back on, and then they'll be perfectly fine 2 hours later with, you know, nothing done to them. That, to me, is a big red flag. Hey, this is very interesting. Was it 2 years ago? I went to a research study. I'm a Gulf War veteran. I served in the first Gulf War, 1991, I guess. So I have been volunteering as a participant in a lot of these research studies for Gulf War illness. So I went down to a lab in DC last summer before last, I guess it was last summer, sat down. They were going to do an EEG on me, baseline, right? So they put all these electrodes on my head and hooked me up to this computer. And I'm sitting there in this office with the tech, turned off all my electronics, right? They didn't want my phone on. They didn't want anything that, you know, could affect the EEG. This technician, who's done this with hundreds of other participants, had the hardest time getting any signals to come out of my head. So all these little sensors that they pasted on my forehead and in my hair and everything, she had to jiggle this. There would be a signal, the signal would disappear. She couldn't explain it. It took her 15 minutes to get this thing going. And before I knew it, the entire lab staff was standing around me, looking at me, with one of them going, "I've never seen this happen before." So somehow I broke the EEG, and the funny thing is, before I turned my phone off, I had charged it fully overnight in the hotel room, like 3 hours before I got to the lab. By the time I got to the point where I had to shut it off, the battery was drained, completely drained. Mm-hmm. And normally it can go for 2 weeks without me charging it. There was some kind of energy going on there.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's classic. And I think it might have been because you had company. You weren't alone. The paranormal stuff that goes along with this is also, I think, important for people to make the
connection. You can't separate it.
Yeah.
There are lots of nuts and bolts people, but yeah, you got to put consciousness in there too. It goes back to me mentioning the bridges I said earlier, where there's got to be certain things that I'll have to experience and accept before I can move on to other things. And I forget that sometimes, right? It's been 11 years since I was face to face with a small gray. Well, that first time. Yeah. I'm sure it's happened since then, but I forget now when people seem to be afraid to report seeing a weird light in the sky, you know, UFO. I remind myself, well, gosh, you know, that's like nothing to me. I know that I've been hanging out with aliens, so a lightness guy doesn't faze me one bit. But there are plenty of people out there that are still at that level where they're afraid of ridicule just for talking about a lightness guy. So you've got to sort of get to that certain point. And there, I think there are people out there, to your point, who can accept that there are UFOs, right? The government has essentially said as much with admitting that all those Tic Tac things are real. I don't know if they are ready to accept that there's a consciousness aspect to it. So even the lead pilot that dealt with the Tic Tac, Commander Fravor, said multiple times that this thing, the Tic Tac, showed up at their cap point and it beat them to it. And he still doesn't know how that happened. So right there is an obvious demonstration of some sort of consciousness aspect to the Tic Tac. Somehow it knew where Commander Fravor was going to go and went there before he did. And so people still, there are some people who aren't quite ready to accept that these things are interacting with us, not only physically or what appears to be physical, but mentally and consciously.
If you really want to know how much the government may or may not know, Jacques Vallée has been involved in this for a long time. And he's been writing, you know, he's one of the ones who was connecting that consciousness element and saying, this isn't what it seems. This isn't just external. The latest book, what he has done is document, like a diary, all of his encounters, his experience, his work with Robert Bigelow, who was studying the UFO aspect of this, and also it got into consciousness because they were on at Skinwalker Ranch reporting things that we would consider maybe supernatural, and then making the connection with possibly this could be a UFO, ET, other stuff. When you want to know behind the scenes what was going on with them trying to get more research funding and find out other ways of describing this, they've been in it since the 80s, 90s, 70s. This isn't a new thing. But what the government will talk about isn't necessarily what all they know. They finally admitted in 2017, that's when the news came out, was in the New York Times, that Ralph Blumenthal and Leslie King came out with, okay, this is what they know. Well, they had tried in 2010 having generals on the record, UFOs. I think that was Leslie King's first book on this, was 2010. And nothing happened. It was like, you know, crickets. Nothing. And so then this came out in 2017 when they finally got the New York Times to say, okay, the military, this is what's going on. And that changed everything for whatever reason. 2017 made a difference when all the stuff prior to that, 2001 and 2010, nothing happened. So I think something else is going on. And I don't doubt that the ETs, the aliens, the Greys, whoever they are, I don't think we have a good grip on that yet, have had a hand in letting this come forward. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, I think they're encouraging people to talk about those and giving hints. And often, you know, these incidents like the Tic Tac one, I think, are a demonstration, you know, meant to get our attention, where we can't deny that, you know, what we're seeing is otherworldly or off-world sort of technology. So, yeah, and we've turned a corner since 2017. So I think people are more willing to talk about it. And, you know, the New Jersey drone incursion that's happened over the last several months, I think, is another indication of them wanting to make a spectacle that can't be ignored. I think that's what's going on there.
And it isn't just locally in the United States. They've had reports, global reports of drone incidents that question what we think is reality of, okay, was it a drone or was it something else? Because the other descriptions look like orbs. They don't look like the typical drone. And then there are people who say that it changed, it morphed from being a drone or an orb into a plane, which also makes it more complicated. Because this is where it comes into, what do you see and what do you believe about what you see? And then, you know, it all of a sudden gets really complicated when you have to go back, well, does somebody else see it with you? And if other people don't see it with you, then you question, well, what did I see? Ha. That's the rabbit hole.
Right. And we know, of course, from years and years and years of working with eyewitnesses, you know, in court cases and what have you, that everybody has an idea about what they saw or what they experienced, but the truth is somewhere in between at all times. There's no real perfect witnesses, and we're infallible. We're human, right?
Yeah.
So there are certain things that you gotta look for in a case, and things with Tic Tac and other incidents where you've not only got expert witnesses and highly trained pilots who've got thousands of hours of flight time. You have multiple radars that also tracked it from several different sources, and it was clearly doing things that we don't understand. So not only, I think, was that a demonstration of, yes, we're here by these beings, but it's also, here's some cool things that can be done that we're going to show you, and, you know, maybe that will inspire us to revisit our understanding of physics. You know, maybe yeah. we can figure that out. It's kind of like a little carrot, I think, that's been dangled out there to say, hey, you've been doing things the hard way. You know, you don't know everything about the universe, you know, and maybe that'll inspire us. Maybe we'll be curious enough to explore that. So if nothing else comes of that, I think just seeing that, physics doesn't work exactly like we expected, that might be benefit enough, I think, from the whole thing.
Do you think your military background had any influence?
It's hard to say. I think that adds to my credibility. I once held a security clearance. I was trained as a intelligence photographer. So, and I spent a lot of time on my ship trailing aircraft carriers around the Pacific and watching planes land. So I've got a decent understanding of what aircraft look like. I don't know if that made me attractive from the being's point of view. Although, as I said, I think my interactions took place long before I joined the military, but it does give me some credibility when I talk about things, and, you know, I'm happy to do it. And I know several other people who served who have had similar experiences. I don't know if they are as willing as I am to talk about them publicly, but you will find when you get a group of veterans together that privately they'll share these kind of stories, especially the ones that are sort of out there on the edge to begin with, like people who serve on submarines, for instance. I think many of them have stories that they'll only share amongst themselves, not necessarily comfortable enough to speak about publicly. I've heard some of them, and there's a lot going on that most people don't know about.
Well, the USOs, yeah, underwater. That part of it is also what makes it so compelling, is this isn't just something up in the sky. It's coming out of what we would consider something that we shouldn't be able to go in and out of with no extra kind of, I guess, equipment, propulsion.
Exactly.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. It challenges our physics.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that that's also part of this, is challenging us to become more evolved on multiple levels, not just, you know, not just creating things and putting things together machine-wise, but in our mind, and that becoming more fluid and fluent in what's happening in our paranormal reality. And that's part of this, I think.
Yeah, one thing that I was thinking about with all of this concentration on the craft itself and the technology and it's like on Christmas night, you get visited by Santa Claus, right? And he's bringing you all these gifts, and all you want to talk about are the flying reindeer. you're ignoring the gifts, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what the people who look at this from the nuts and bolts point of view are doing, right? You're kind of working it backwards. The gifts are, you know, the consciousness and the psychic abilities and stuff that they're here to unlock. It's not the craft, you know, although they're conscious too, but it's, you know, don't get distracted by the flying reindeer. Good grief.
The wizard behind the curtain, and there's the reindeer out there, but the wizard's over there. It's like, wait a second. I think for some people that's okay, because if they're not ready for it, then there's no use shocking them to the point of a heart attack. I think something else that goes along with this. You have to go with your own gut. If this is uncomfortable, it makes you uncomfortable, back off for a little while and reapproach it later after you've had maybe a little bit more chance to digest a few things. I want to go back. Has the remote viewing, is that something new for you that you've been doing since this 2014 encounter?
I started really doing this in 2006 or so. And I was interested, of course, after hearing it on late night radio. But I've always been intuitive and psychic in some ways. And when I discovered remote viewing was a thing, that is a way to really harness that ability and direct it to do, you know, useful, practical things. So it's psychic ability with a framework and intention to do stuff. So things really ramped up. I think once I started doing remote viewing, I became far more psychic. And the whole time that I've been doing training in remote viewing, I have felt the other presences around. I think that my alien friends have been looking at this very eagerly to see what I would do with it. So they've encouraged me during that time and made themselves known during remote viewing training that I've done. So it's something they take a great interest in. And I think that's one of the goals, is to help develop my psychic skills and abilities. So it's funny how they go hand in hand. I've got another remote viewing friend who says, you know, you find me a remote viewer and I'll guarantee there's some kind of alien connection, like an experiencer. And it's funny that I know a lot of people who do remote viewing who are also experiencers, not necessarily by choice, but they do definitely go hand in hand for some reason.
It seems to improve your psychic abilities, at least from what I've, you know, from what I've seen and the people I've read about and talked to, that's one thing that kind of goes along with it. It's a consciousness thing. You're expanding your awareness.
Right. It's exercising a muscle. And you know, you've talked about kids and telepathy. I think we all have these abilities, innate abilities. We're born with them. And I think as kids, you know, we are, like as babies, I think we communicate telepathically, so we know what our parents are doing and generally what's going on. I think as we grow older and we realize that a lot of these parents aren't quite listening on that telepathic channel anymore, and all the action is happening in the verbal world, I think a lot of us leave that behind and we start talking and communicating that way, and we totally forget that we can do stuff telepathically. There are some people that maintain that. I think that you'll find a lot of psychics, really good psychics, have trauma in their past. And I think that's one case where they hold that psychic door open because they use it as a survival skill. I think the telepathy tapes that are really popular now, talking about the nonverbal autistic kids, that's a situation where they just never left that telepathic stage. They just never picked up the verbal part and they continue to work with telepathy. So I think it's an innate ability that we all have. Imagine if we were all suddenly aware of that. You know, we wouldn't have any more lying on the planet. You know, you couldn't fool anybody because everybody could see your intentions. Probably no cheating or greed, or the solution of separateness, I guess, that we all have would start to melt away. And perhaps there would be more cooperation amongst us, and community would start to grow in areas where we always thought we were supposed to compete against each other. It's possible on the other end of all this, there is just a totally transformed society where people start working together instead of against each other. And for me, that really is what keeps me going.
Well, I can see where the barriers would come down in a way when you realize and you're telepathically aware that the person across from you has a lot more in common with you, and you don't have to hide that. You don't have, you know, that vulnerability that a lot of people shield. It's because there's an insecurity. And when you realize, well, we all have that same sense of vulnerability, and maybe that's an asset and not a detraction, if we can come to terms with, hey, this is our planet. We have, a need to preserve what we have been given here so we can survive and our species can survive and all the other species that we share it with can survive. So that's a really basic interest of creating some kind of a universal knowing, a core value of the planet as a common goal. But we're talking, I think, ahead maybe a couple decades, hopefully if the comet doesn't come visit us, or maybe the comet is here to help. 2032, okay, watch for that comet. They keep changing how our odds are increasing.
I have been looking at that, but I know things will be fine either way. I know things will be fine.
I think we're here for a purpose. Whatever the purpose is, that's, you know, might be beyond us right now, but we're working through it. And the big deal is starting to share these experiences and saying, hey, this is happening. It's real. Let's deal with it instead of trying to ignore it or make it go away. Because the ETs, I think, are trying to say, we're not going anywhere. Hello, South Sea. We're not going anywhere. So there you go. Is there anything else you want to add?
Not that I know of, but I really enjoyed our conversation.
You're doing your remote viewing and you're inviting people to join along, and this is on Blue Sky. Is there anything you want to, anything special about that?
I've been leading a group at the Ryan Research Center where I'm a volunteer for several years, where every month we do remote viewing practice. So if you're interested in figuring what this is all about and trying your hand at it, you can join an online meeting. But also on Blue Sky, I've been posting, or I'll start posting, some practice targets, and you can see how well you do. So you can follow me on Blue Sky. I'm at etc.markturner.net on Blue Sky.
Okay. And I'm going to put a link to the documentary that you're in, too, in the description for the show.
Great.
And thank you. Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.